I have discovered that Apple Music is great on desktop Linux. So good, in fact, we've cancelled our Spotify subscription and started using Apple Music exclusively.
Well, you can hand in your Linux nerd credentials right away, apparently.
Well, you'd think so, except Linux is, well, not quite a first-class citizen because Apple don't publish the clients, but there is an excellent Apple Music client for desktop Linux, and it's properly brilliant.
I think you'd have to go some way to claim anything that Apple make on Linux is a first-class citizen at all.
Right. Yes. Okay. Well, that's fair. So, yeah, the motivations for going through this process were we moved to, all three of us have got iPhone now for nearly 2 years, and we have the iCloud family plan to do phone backups and all of that stuff. And it hadn't really landed with me that in amongst that collection of services, you get Apple Music subscription. So, as we've mentioned in prior conversations, the cost of living is going up in the UK, so we've been scrutinising where we're spending money. And it occurred to me, we're paying for a Spotify service and an Apple Music service, and we're not using both of them, so one of them should probably get ejected. Now, the long and short of it is, it's Spotify that's going after some 12 years of being a customer. And the first sort of port of call for that was, obviously, Apple Music works on iPhone, so that was a given. That was nice and easy for the rest of the family. But we also have it connected to the Amazon Echo and the Roku and some Android devices, and there are first-party Apple Music clients for all of those things. So I was able to connect the rest of the house, and then that just left me, the Linux user who listens to music on their Linux desktop.
Out in the cold.
Yes, and I had to figure out, well, is there a way forward for me to do two things? One is listen to my music on my desktop when I'm working, and more importantly, stream music when I do my live streams, because I have been using Spotify as my music source when I do live streams. There's a company called Streambeats who make available copyright-free music for streamers so you don't get copyright ID'd with your streams and all the rest of it. And they publish their stuff in Apple Music and in Spotify.
Oh.
So that was good. But the thing was, is how do I get access to Apple Music in my rather convoluted OBS setup?
Did you attach a headphone cable to your iPhone? Oh, no, hang on.
I should have gone for something a bit more Heath Robinson. It would have been a lot easier.
Did you hold a microphone near your phone like I did in the 1980s when I recorded the charts off the radio and hold a microphone near the radio?
Yeah, I could have gone for something like that, but I wanted like a drop-in replacement. So with almost no changes, I could not change the way that I use my desktop for listening to music and also continue to stream.
This is you unicorn hunting again then.
I thought I might be when I started out. The first thing that I discovered is, well, actually, relatively recently, Apple have a web player. So at the very least, you can log in with your web browser and you can access Apple Music that way. So if you just need access to the stuff in a fairly basic way, you can log into the website. But I wanted an actual client because of the way that I have everything integrated. And there is one, and it is called Cider. And it is really good. So it is basically a lot like the Spotify application for desktop Linux, but it's Apple Music. And it supports all of the features of Apple Music, which I didn't realize Apple have spatial audio support and a whole raft of additional capabilities. And this application supports all of that as well.
And is it an actual native desktop application using some sort of API or some sort of library, or is it just a wrapper around the web player?
It is a bespoke application that is using some APIs and backend code that Apple provide.
Okay.
And that does limit it slightly, and I'll get into that in a moment. But the Linux client is currently like a Vue.js application wrapped in like an Electron-style desktop app wrapper. But this is version 1.6 of Cider, and currently in development is 2.0, and they are making native implementations for each of the platforms, because this Cider is also works on Windows and Mac OS. And lots of people use it on the other platforms because people believe it to be the superior way to consume Apple Music, even on those platforms as well. So they're currently writing a Swift version and something else and something else. My understanding is the Linux version is always going to be Electron based because they need the DRM stuff that Widevine provides in the Electron bit.
I see. Okay.
But the long and short of it has a built-in graphic equalizer, which is very capable. It supports spatial audio. Apple Music does that through Dolby Atmos, but they use a open implementation of a spatial audio thing. So it isn't Dolby Atmos, but it's a lot like it. And they have all sorts of different audio profiles. So you, depending on the headphones you're wearing, you can actually change the sound separation in your ears. It's pretty fantastic. I think it's pretty impressive.
I guess it doesn't do the full spatial audio that you get when you have an Apple device and an Apple pair of headphones. Like, if I turn my head away from my iPad, the audio moves to my other ear. And if I turn my head towards it, it moves back to the central. I think it's optional. But I've had that where I look at, if I turn my head and look at the iPad, the audio comes straight to me from the iPad. And if I turn myself away, it comes from the side. It's quite freaky. And I think there's only certain niche circumstances where you would want that, but you might.
I didn't know that was a feature. And I haven't observed that. The spatial audio support they have is some of the tracks on Apple Music are specifically spatial audio, and it is able to work with those and present those in the way that they were intended.
Nice.
I've never actually used Apple Music. Does it just nowadays provide a streaming service equivalent to Spotify, or is it also like a store for buying music like iTunes used to be back in the day?
So it's definitely a Spotify-like streaming service, although what I did learn is that Apple Music has, I think, about 100 million songs in it at the moment, and Spotify is ranked at around 80 million, but Spotify include 3 million podcasts in that number. So I have noticed, for example, there were some artists that I used to listen to on Spotify that are no longer on Spotify, but I've been able to find them again on Apple Music. As for purchasing music, I don't know. I haven't looked into that at all. I've just used it as a streaming service.
You can.
I used to buy music on iTunes when I had an iPhone many years ago. I had iPhone 4, and then I moved to Android. And when I came back to iOS a year or so ago, Apple Music launched and then showed me all the music that I haven't listened to for 10 years that I bought back then. So yeah, it you clearly can, you know, buy tracks and stuff as well.
Yeah. And then the last piece to this puzzle is, how do I hook all of this up to OBS for streaming? And there's a fantastic bit of software called Player CTL, which is a command line tool which talks the MPRE protocol for skipping tracks, changing volumes, pausing, stopping, starting, all of that good stuff. And this CIDR application supports MPRE. So all of the bindings that I've got on my Stream Deck and in my scripted automation of OBS, I just needed to change the player name from Spotify to CIDR, and everything carried on working just as it had been before. I love Player CTL. It's a brilliant piece of software. So if you are an Apple Music subscriber and you use a bit of desktop Linux, then take a look at CIDR. It's pretty great.
It is surprisingly easy to get games onto a Steam Deck.
I know, right? You just install them through Steam and there they are.
Very funny. Yes, that is true. But what if you are, put your head in the shoes of a game developer, maybe put your feet in there, and you're developing a game and you want to get your game onto a Steam Deck without going through that publishing process of sending it all the way to Steam Valve for review and then coming back down to your Steam Deck. You want to get your game onto your Steam Deck to try it out. Perhaps you're developing games for Windows, and perhaps you want to see if you can port it to the Steam Deck. So you go and buy a Steam Deck. How do I get my game onto the Steam Deck? And it's that scenario that I was thinking about, because I was noodling around with some game development tools like Love2D and Godot and a bunch of others. And I pondered, how do I get this onto the Steam Deck to try out? Because I wanted to test things like the controllers, the input methods, and make sure that I get all the button mapping correctly, which is a reasonable thing to expect. And I looked at various guides that a lot of the Linux YouTubers had made, where they talk about how you get software onto the Steam Deck. And it seemed like such a faff to use third-party tools or to go into desktop mode on the Steam Deck, switching to like the KDE desktop. And sure enough, I can get files onto that. And I followed a few guides. It just seemed like a lot of hard work. And it turns out there's a really easy way to do this that Steam have built into the platform. And it's called SteamOS DevKit Client. And it's brilliant. It's really cool. And what you do is you install it, this thing called SteamOS DevKit Client, on your workstation, and you can use it to send files to your Steam Deck. And on your Steam Deck, you also need to have this DevKit, but that's pre-installed. You just need to press a button to enable it in the menu on the Steam Deck. So you can normally use this to send games from your developer workstation to a gaming computer, and you would have to install something on it. But the Steam Deck has all that built in. Mm-hmm. So all you need to do is install the client on your gaming workstation in order to send the software to the Steam Deck.
So this is like a standard Steam mechanism for deploying games or for transferring games between machines. It just happens to work well on the Steam Deck too.
Well, yes, I think it might have been developed for the Steam, right, for SteamOS. The name of the project, it's on Steam's own GitLab instance, and it's called SteamOS DevKit Client. So it actually has the name, you know, SteamOS in the name. I don't know the full origin, but that would make sense that it's part of, you know, the origin story of Steam Deck. They had to think about how would a game dev get software on there. And it just, what struck me is how complex it all seemed when you think about getting like ROMs onto your system or other software. But actually, it's surprisingly easy when you just want to put a single game onto your Steam Deck. And the thing that I found super interesting was that the software they've created is written in Python. It's got a little GUI. And all you have to do is give your game a name in this. You get a little graphical user interface on your workstation. You give it the directory where your build is on your workstation and the name of the executable that needs to be run. And then you can like press a send button and it sends it over the network to your Steam Deck. It just automatically finds your Steam Deck and sends it across the network to your Steam Deck. And then on your Steam Deck, it shows up as a game in the Steam UI. And you can just pick up your Steam Deck as you would. You don't have to go into desktop mode or do any real faffing. And you just press play on your game. And you're in your game. It launches just like any other game that you installed from Steam, but this came over the wire from your developer workstation.
So I'm wondering if this is what Chimera OS must be using under the hood to do all of its magic with the third-party game stores and the other games that you can just lob at it. Maybe that's the mechanism by which, because these things show up in the Steam menus and look natively integrated.
So I've also used EmuDeck, which is a bundle of scripts for loading emulated games into the Steam interface. And that actually does some stuff in the background on the Steam Deck to put in the sort of database entries in the client and also load in the images. So you get the proper poster images and the images with the background cut out when you go into the like side menu thing. I don't know what it's called, overlay menu. So it's certainly possible to do it, I think, with some of the Steam client APIs on the device, but I didn't know that any of this was possible to do from another machine.
In fact, I think the SteamOS DevKit client uses some of those calls because it, in fact, it uses rsync under the covers, I think, or SCP or something. It just, you know, whizzes it over the network. It's Python, and there's a debug output you can see when it's sending the files. So you can make sure it's sending all the right files from the right place. And then you can see it registering a non-Steam game, just like you would register a non-Steam application by pointing to the path of where the executable is. The reason I found this fascinating was initially, for some reason, I built a Windows version of something, or I downloaded a Windows version of something and sent it across using this method. And there's a tick box where you can say, use Steam Play. So you can make it force to use Steam Play with the Windows build of something. So if you were a game developer and you were just trying out the Steam Deck, you could push your Windows build onto the Steam Deck and just tick a box, and it will create the non-Steam game entry in the library and force it to use Proton in order to play the game. Mm. And then after I'd done that, I thought, well, hang on, why am I sending the Windows version? I wrote this software. I can put the Linux build. So I created a Linux build and sent that across. Now, the interesting thing, the further interesting thing I found about this is it can run any arbitrary executable. And so your game, whatever it was built with, if it was built with Godot, for example, there'll be an executable and then a big file with all your assets in. If it's written in Love2D, then you might have a Love2D binary and a bunch of other libraries and then the .love file or something. But it can also just run app images. And so if you have an app image build of a thing, doesn't have to be a game, but an app image of a thing, you can just whiz that over the network. And in the DevKit client, you just specify the executable is the app image and it just runs it and it launches really quick. You know, the hardware is pretty good. And when you hit play, the app image just boom, loads up. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the Steam Deck is pretty comparable to many modern day laptops.
Right. And it's not like it's running 1,000 other things at the same time. It's running the Steam UI and not a lot else.
Yeah. And if you're looking for other ways to get access to an archive of software on your Steam Deck, one of my colleagues at work has a Steam Deck and is a big fan of the Steam Deck. And we worked on the Determinate Nix installer and a new way to install Nix on non-Nix OS and Mac OS and also the Steam Deck and preserving all of the Steam Deck's immutability properties. So if you want access to everything that Nix OS can do, you can install Nix on a Steam Deck and then access all of the stuff that's in the Nix repository. So I have to ask, if you're pushing games to a Steam Deck that you have written, is there something that you're working on? What is the true motivation behind doing all of this?
Yeah, partly I've been looking at a couple of game jams that are coming up soon, and I've been thinking about entering them or just noodling around with stuff. And it struck me that I want to be able to play the games that I make on the Steam Deck, because it's easy enough to run them on my desktop and plug in a game controller and I can just play. But actually what I'd quite like to do is be able to take a game I have written on a Steam Deck and use it somewhere other than at my desk.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the Steam Deck was designed for. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm noodling around with some game ideas and, more on that in a later episode, perhaps.
Well, I've finally found a note-taking method that I can stick to. I've always had this fantasy that I would be able to write notes by hand and have them digitized and everything would be archived and searchable and I'd have notes about everything I've ever done. And I've been trying to do this since I was probably, I think since I was at university, I would try taking notes on paper and writing them up. And then I would give up on that because I'd never go back to them. And I'd just type them straight in on a netbook for a while, and I've tried some hardware note-taking devices like the Boogie Board and the Rocket Book, and whatever I've tried, I'd never end up sticking to it, and I never end up taking many notes. But I found something that I can actually do and stick to now, and I'm really happy.
Have you really, though?
Well,
I think I've been through this cycle about 15 times now.
As have I, yes.
The reason that I know is because it's the one thing that's worked for me before in the past. And that was in my first job, I used an app called KJournal, which, as the name suggests, was a KDE app back in it might have been the KDE 3 days even. I can't quite remember if it was that far back. Definitely early KDE 4. And the way KJournal worked is you opened it and it gave you a page for that day and you made your notes on it. But KJournal has gone away. Like, I ended up at that job, I journaled everything I did, every time I had a problem and solved it, and every time I, you know, investigated something or had a meeting and had something to take away afterwards, I just bashed it in this because I always just had a page to write on that was always the right page. But yeah, KJournal's gone away now. It lost to the mists of time. I can't even find it mentioned anywhere online, really. So I may well have been the only user at the time.
I used a workflow like that in the past using an app called Red Notebook.
Right. So I found a modern note-taking app called Joplin, which a few of my colleagues at work use. It's an open source app that's been around for a few years now. And it has some of the general nice things that I look at in note-taking. It uses Markdown, of course. Anything I write on a computer has to use Markdown these days. Otherwise, it's just in the bin. It's cross-platform, so Windows, Mac, and Linux, although Linux is the only one relevant to me, but also on mobile as well. It's on Android and iOS. and it can sync your notes via first party service, its own Joplin cloud service, third party cloud services like Dropbox and so on, and also via Nextcloud, via WebDAV. So you can self-host your note syncing if you choose to do that. It also has tagging and search, which is good for actually finding your notes again afterwards. But the really cool thing is it supports plugins, and one of the plugins it supports is called Journal.
Aha.
Which does exactly what I want. You open Joplin at the beginning of the day and it gives you a page and it gives you a nice structure to all your notes, so they're organized by month and then by day. And you just make your notes in Markdown, and then the next day you either open it again, or if it's still open from the previous day, you hit a key combination and it gives you today's page, and then you go. And I've actually been keeping notes, and it's really cool.
So how long is it since you've had a reliable workflow for note keeping?
Probably about 10 years.
Right, okay.
So I also have this problem. You've mentioned some of the things I've also tried, like Rocket Books and paper notebooks and all that kind of stuff, and they've all fallen by the wayside. I've never found great success with any of them. The one I did use successfully was actually similar to you. At a previous place I worked, like three companies back, so we're talking over a decade ago, I was on a Windows laptop at that place, and I just used a text editor, TextPad, and I just had one big text file. And every morning I would just put the date, DDMMYY, hit enter, and then start typing for that date. And if I wanted to search for anything, it was all in that one big text file. And it wasn't super enormous. I wasn't like pasting huge gobs of text, but at least it was reverse chronological and everything was in there. And if I wanted to plan something for next week, I would put next week's date in there and then put a note in there to remind myself. It was my to-do list and everything. And I really liked that. I really got on well with this one linear file. And on Linux, I switched and used Tomboy because it had the same thing that you had in KJournal. You could make it create a file for today's date. And I loved Tomboy. It was just absolutely perfect. You could link notes together. It was very wiki-like syntax and very Markdown-like, very easy to use. But since then, I've not found anything that keeps me focused on the notes. It's a real challenge, I find. I just can't find one.
I think this is why there are so many note-taking applications, because it's actually a difficult problem to solve, because I think different people are looking for different solutions in the way that they take their notes. You've both talked about a journaling solution, which I did use for about 9 months, but I found that daily journal approach. I couldn't find my stuff very effectively. So I've always preferred the sort of organize by topic and category and cross-reference with different things.
Mm.
But I've been through a stack of different note-taking tools in recent years. I mean, just recently, I am now using Notion. So as a result of changing job, we use Notion at work, and I was so impressed with it, I moved all of my notes into Notion. And at the time when I started, I was using Standard Notes. So I switched away from Standard Notes and exported everything from Standard Notes into Notion. But then I found all of my notes from ages ago that were in Quone Notes that I'd exported at some point, and I dropped all of those in. Then I found my export from ZimWiki, and I dumped all of those in. And then I found the bazillion text files that I'd got scattered around various directories in my home directory, where it was just too much faff to open whatever note-taking tool I was using at the time. And I just fired up a text editor and just mashed some words into a thing. But I've switched to Notion, and I've got everything in it. And I've even ejected Todoist, and I use Notion for my to-do lists now.
That's funny, because I'm also using Notion as a result of my new employment, and I have it open as a web app. So I just have a Notion web page open full screen, but on my personal one. But I also have the work one logged in with my work credentials. So I have two separate windows, both with the same icon, one for work, one for personal.
Don't mix them up.
Yeah. Well, I put them on different displays, which like makes my headspace figure that out. But I also imported notes from Standard Notes and threw away my Standard Notes. And I also found, I've just found a directory in there called Evernote Export 2016, 1215. So that gives you an idea of how far back my evolution of crazy note-taking antics have been.
So I log into Notion using my home account and my work account so I can flip between them through the drop down at the top. And the reason I do that is we've got the fully paid up version at work, which has got a bunch of extra stuff. So I actually start a private note in there, use all of the nifty features, and then just lift it and drop it into my own instance.
So one really nice tool for my workflow at work that I found with Joplin is it has a plugin. It probably has a plugin for other bug tracking systems as well, but in particular, it has a plugin for Jira, which is the bug tracking system that Moodle uses. And that means that I can really easily create a reference to a Moodle bug, and it actually pulls in stuff like the current state of the bug, and you can expand it, and it gives you a little bit of metadata around it and a link straight to it. So whenever I'm making a note about a particular issue, I can just stick in a little tag and it creates this for me. That's one of the other really nice plugins I found.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've quite liked about Notion moving from standard notes. Standard notes I found was very text heavy and it didn't let me put images and anything rich in there. Whereas with Notion, if I drop a GitHub link, it will offer to put a preview in there.
Nice.
With a little box with some details about the pull request or issue or whatever it might be. But it's got so many of these integration points that, like, it doesn't matter what you paste in there, whether it's just a picture, you just get a square with a picture in. But if you paste literally any kind of URL, it knows what that is and will embed it in.
Yeah.
I'm coming round to Notion. It's just the headache I have is the organization of it all. Like you say, Martin, it's either chronological or it's organizational. And I feel like I'm running out of time on this planet to sort out my notes. And so I've started throwing them away. Like that Evernote export, I've got rid of, and I'm not
not worth importing. It's gone.
No.
That's probably quite healthy in many respects as it happens.
I like to hope so.
The lack of rich text in standard notes was why I was looking to move away from it. And one of the things I've done is I found that Notion has templates for different types of, let's say, content. And I have in my saved messages in Telegram photographs of handwritten notes and photographs of dishes that I've cooked in the kitchen that I'm pleased with and I want to recreate in the future. And this is a real faff to go and find those recipes from the past in this big scrolling backlog of stuff. So I've lifted all of those out of Telegram and I've dropped those into a recipes template. And I've now got, I didn't have to rewrite them. I just shoved the photographs in there straight off of Telegram. So now I've got all of my recipes in one place. And I was very pleased to be able to share a recipe with somebody at the weekend for going, oh, I know exactly where it is.
I look forward to all the feedback we get from everyone telling us what their note-taking applications are so we can all switch in 6 months or a year when we get tired of these tools that we've selected.